From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now, or learn the stuff they don't want you to know.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel Gorilla Boy Brown.
They Ooh. Call me Ben, you are you, and that makes this stuff they don't want you to know. That's an interesting moniker, and it's Gorilla Boy has taken the office by storm.
That's what my girlfriend calls me.
Yeah, it's just weird that she does it in front of other people. But, you know, if you're happy, you're happy.
I think she means it as a compliment.
I think so. I think because she says it with a note of admiration.
And it's because I'm really mad good at sign language.
Oh, I thought it was a chest hair.
Well, that too.
So we're talking today about something we've returned to often in the show, and that is cryptids, right? Let's be honest, folks. We're living in a world where there's ecological collapse.
Can you do it in a movie trailer voice?
Sure. In a world on the verge of ecological collapse, three men, four counting their super producer Tristan.
And one gorilla boy.
Wait, now we
now
have five
too many,
people.
Too many men.
We have five people. Okay, so we've talked about this before, and one of the big quests for the human species has always been a quest of discovery, right? What can we find at the edges of the map? The thing most people want to find, the real fun stuff, would be, of course, a cryptid. But what is a cryptid?
Yeah, that's a fun term, but what does it mean, right? Well, it's an umbrella term that describes a whole host of different types of creatures that are all rumored to exist. This is very important that it's rumored. There's no scientific proof of the existence of these creatures, but the fascination still remains, right? And the study of cryptids is known as cryptozoology. Gosh, that's fun to say. And we have a much older exploration of this. One of the first episodes we ever did was an update, or not an update. I guess it was an exploration of our videos on cryptozoology, Ben.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cryptozoology show notes. Just for a quick recap to give everybody the lay of the land. Oh, and Matt, you have your Mothman shirt on today.
I just noticed that. I did it on purpose.
You got Gorilla Boy, Mothman, Tristan, we'll get to you. I didn't mean that to sound so menacing. We'll find a nickname. But
you're next, buddy.
You're next. We got to let the badger out of the bag here. Cryptozoology is, at the very least, a controversial field. The vast majority of scientists and any other related subjects, zoologists, biologists, ecologists, and so on, think that cryptozoology is essentially a pseudoscience.
Yeah, a lot of times these scientists with a capital S believe that the cryptozoologists suffer from confirmation bias, from believing so wholeheartedly that these things exist, they will take evidence that they find and kind of make it tell the story that they wish it to be.
Sort of cherry pick, right? Mm-hmm. Like if I, like a zoologist would say there are rumors of Gorilla Boy out in the wild.
Yeah.
Let's see if it's true. And their critique is that, or their criticism rather, is that a cryptozoologist instead would say, I know Gorilla Boy is real. I will find the evidence that supports this.
Yeah, it's that whole getting caught up in the thrill of the hunt thing.
Mm-hmm. Ben, and of course, throughout the centuries, various experts have investigated claims of previously unidentified animals. And every year, the search for new organisms continues. But what sort of animals would be considered cryptids?
I mean, you can describe almost anything, you know, as a cryptid that fits in the following categories. So we've got subjects of eyewitness accounts, historically located creatures from a specific region or regions. And most importantly, they have to not be acknowledged by the scientific community.
Yes, right. There's
AKA
not a species.
Imaginary.
Yeah.
So they, we would have, you know, we would have like old man Frederick saying, I've lived in these woods for now I'm 50 years, and every moonless night the skunk ape comes out of the swamps.
He does come out of them swamps, and I tell you what, when I'm on that porch sitting out there,
mm-hmm.
you'll hear the whisper of the wind, you hear them grasshopper. Well, this is getting weird, this accent right here.
weirding me out really bad. I just want to take a moment to say this is one of those things, the things I just said about them being imaginary, where some folks ding us or me or whatever for like not believing fully in the things that we describe. But that's not the point. This stuff is fascinating to think about, and there are obviously more compelling examples than others. I just wanted to throw that out there. I don't think that
that's
by and large cryptids are imaginary, but I just think it's funny that one of the categories that they need to fit in is that they are not scientifically acknowledged to exist.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And it's a weird thing because once they are acknowledged, then they become no longer a cryptid. So this weird umbrella term applies more to the position of a proposed organism, right? Because once it's a genuine scientifically acknowledged organism, then it's not mysterious anymore.
Just goes in the books of creatures.
It's just a stink bird or a skunk ape. Skunk ape is a cryptid. Isn't that a great name?
Yeah.
So the outlines that Noel provided, the categories there, perfectly incorporate all the famous cryptids, you know, like the big blockbuster cryptids, Bigfoot, Loch Ness Monster.
Godzilla.
Still out on the loose.
Yeah. I don't know if that fits in, but maybe. Maybe.
Well, Godzilla came from the ocean, right?
Yes.
And a creature of that size could easily disappear into the ocean.
Yeah, I want to say too real quick, not to get too derailed, but some of the most bizarre and fascinating creatures that border on seeming as close to like extraterrestrials as we're ever going to get come from the deep, deep ocean. I don't know if you've ever seen that Planet Earth episode about the deep, dark ocean.
The abyssal plane.
It's insane. They've got like weird like little lamps hanging on their foreheads and stuff. They look like something out of a nightmare.
And they're very otherworldly because they exist under such extreme pressures. Right.
And they have to have that adaptation that allows them to flourish more or less in this bizarre and lightless environment.
Well, and we're going to get to that a little later, I believe.
Yes, because this – I'm glad that we said this because – this definition also incorporates, along with the really strange things like gigantic snakes, dragons, relic dinosaur populations, and other allegations, the definition of cryptid also incorporates animals that you might not think of, like relic populations of animals that were formerly thought to be extinct, such as the coelacanth, right? Everybody in Western Europe thought that the coelacanth was extinct, despite the vast amounts of native populations going, oh, yeah, that fish has always been here, and it sucks to eat. Don't eat it. But then, you know, these scientists, finger quote, air quote, discovered it, and now it's not a cryptid. This could also be animals that look very similar to known creatures, yet are different enough to qualify as their own species. That's happening a lot with DNA testing now. But let's face it. Let's wake up, smell the Folgers, face the facts. The holy grail of possible cryptids has never been a small new species of bottlenose blue fly or the cousin of the finch with a separate color palette. Oh, no. The more things change, the more they stay the same. And that means what people want to find are
big creatures.
The Godzillas.
The Godzillas. The King Kongs, right? The Cthulhus, you know?
Cthulhu is kind of a proto-Godzilla in a lot of ways. I mean, he came from beneath the ocean's deep and, you know, rose up to crush us all.
Yeah, but nobody wants to find that, right? Please tell me nobody wants to find the one who won't be named.
I'm down.
Obviously, I'm a huge fan of Lovecraft, at least the mythology.
Yeah.
But nothing about his real life. He was a terrible, terrible person.
But just to get back on here.
Yeah.
The idea of this creature is that it causes utter madness, right? That's right. The idea. Yeah. Just even thinking about it causes madness. So why would you want to find one? Or it. Or he, she, whatever
just to,
they.
You know, push the boundaries.
Yeah. Oh, all right.
Be more hardcore.
Okay, cool.
What is life if not to be lived?
All right.
Right? Did our fortune cookie arguments persuade you?
I'm persuaded.
You're right, though. People want big animals. People want to find krakens, abominable snow folk, thunderbirds, dragons, dinosaurs.
Did you say snow folk?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. It's 2017, you know. It's not just a bunch of snow dudes out there in the Himalayas, one would hope.
Yeah.
But that's a big question. Are there really any large animals out there? And if so, how can we find them?
Well, we find them through an impulse that has been with our species as long as we've been around, is this search for other life, whether it's on our planet or elsewhere. So the current age of man in the Anthropocene puts our species in a uniquely fortuitous and particularly perilous time in our search for undiscovered species. So due to the spreading of our species across areas, vast areas of the world previously forbidden to us, we've got the technology and the wherewithal to go to places we would not have normally been able to go in our formative times, let's say. So as a result of that propagation, we're also kind of collapsing ecosystems.
Not kind of.
No, yeah, totally doing that thing at a alarming and, dare we say, catastrophic rate, which means that we are totally racing ourselves to discover animals that may already be extinct by the time we get to them.
Yeah, so what I think that's a very, very good point. So we're more capable of going to the hinterlands of Antarctica, right? To the bottom of the seafloor or... Yeah, that's perfect. To deep caves, you know, and to space, to all these places we could ordinarily never go. So we're more likely to find stuff that's there if we get to it before our pollution does, essentially. We're also very much in the dark about just how many species remain out there in the wild. This blows my mind. We don't know exactly what we will discover. In the insect realm, there are hundreds of thousands of unidentified species, and the brutal math of the equation ensures that many of them will vanish before anyone finds and identifies them, including, like, native populations. So not just, you know, ivory tower scientists, but tribes that are largely uncontacted may not even be able to identify all of the varieties of moth in their region.
That's weird to think about. In 2011, the Census of Marine Life estimated that Earth is home to about 8.7 million species, give or take 1.3 million. You know, you got it when you make a big number like that and you're estimating the number of species, especially how many could or could not exist. You got to give it a bit of an error, a margin of error.
A little wiggle room.
But this number ultimately breaks down to 6.5 million different species on land and 2.2 million different species in the ocean. And if we count microbes, my goodness, that number skyrockets. So let's jump to 2016 when researchers at Indiana University estimated that there might be between 100 billion and 1 trillion species of microbes out there. Just kicking it with us, just hanging out, you know, on our skin, just on that leaf over there.
No, it's like if you ever get a chance to see those, that microscopic photography of gut bacteria or of like these various microbes. And I mean, it's like fractals inside fractals. It's like these worlds within worlds that we cannot possibly even contemplate. Like, that's insane to me. And then you think about our position in, you know, the universe and in the planet. And then as it relates to that, it's just like more than the mind can even wrap itself around.
Yes. If you have not read The Filth, read the graphic novel The Filth today.
It also brings to mind supersymmetry. You know, when you consider that each of our bodies are comprised more of other life forms than human cells.
Mm-hmm.
We're outnumbered. I think that there are 5 bacterial cells for every human cell in your body.
But the size ratio is very different, right?
Right.
But it's absolutely right with the numbers.
Human cells are much larger, and it's strange. You know, we're all agglomerations of things. We're all much more like cities in our way than we are individuals.
But we also shouldn't forget that there is still a ton of Earth left to explore. I mean, technological advancements have been just huge in this respect. Satellites, LIDAR, drones, all given us this glimpse into hitherto unexplored regions, remote, you know, inhospitable, that we never would have been able to lay eyes on, let alone take readings from and learn about the makeup of the, you know, materials and the climates and the various conditions of these places.
Yes, but again, what about the big stuff? Could a large animal, let's say the size of a Labrador.
How about a Labradoodle?
All right, yeah, I can do Labradoodle. A Labradoodle or up. Or maybe even, you know what, let's raise the stakes. Something the size of a horse, perhaps.
Okay.
Could it remain undiscovered for the entire span of human civilization?
That's a tough one. And I think we're going to have to look at that after a quick word from our sponsor.
You rascal.
Here's where it gets crazy.
So what's the answer?
It's possible. It really is. Yeah. No, well, we're a family show, so no Tuckus.
No doubt.
I used to have a boss who said, I want you to give me the straight poop. Give me the, like saying the dish, you know, give me the stuff. Yeah,
the
like, tell me
poop.
The truth. Give me the straight poop.
Was it a cool boss?
No, he was awful.
But straight poops are a pretty cool phrase.
I think it's a northern thing. He was from like Pennsylvania or something.
Yeah. Well, write in and let us know if you are from a part of the world where people say straight poop. But it really is. We'll give you the straight poop here. It really is possible that an entire group of large animals has escaped the notice of humanity at large. And just a side note, I think I'm going to stick with Tuckus. So every time I was going to say is Tuckus butt? Is that what that means?
Yes.
And it's Tuckus, technically.
Yes.
Okay. You know what? I've committed to it. I'm going to ride this pony into the sunset.
I like it.
Ride this cryptid into the sunset. There are big obstacles to this concept, even though it is possible. We have to consider something that we've looked at in the past when we specifically examined, say, Bigfoot or the rumors of dinosaurs in African forest. The thing is, a large animal needs a lot of energy, and it would probably have a measurable impact on an observable ecosystem that would be in proportion to or commensurate with its size. So one great example of this is whenever a whale dies and it sinks to the seabed and it becomes this sort of funereal rotting oasis for the creatures of the deep.
Yeah, it's like that story that came out not too long ago out of Indonesia where there was these photographs and video of what looks like a Loch Ness monster type thing or some kind of crazy, you know, sea elephant or something. And it turns out it's just the carcass, the gelatinous molten carcass of a baleen whale, I believe, but it starts to contort and stretch and do all this bizarre stuff. And
yeah, whale skulls look rather odd when all the stuff's peeled back from it.
Right. I think that's a very polite way to say it. I will say that they look fascinating and terrifying in a way. Imagine
Looks like tusks. Yeah, almost.
Imagine living thousands of years ago and then discovering these bones that would wash up on shore. You know?
It's interesting, though, in an article in Live Science relating to the sighting I was just talking about, a whale biologist by the name of Alexander Wirth, there's an interesting quote here that I think pertains to our discussion. He says, quote, "There is lots of stuff in the ocean that we don't know about, but there's nothing that big that remains unknown."
And that's the thing, because that's a controversial that's still a point of contention.
Obviously, one man's opinion, but it's, you know.
But he is an expert.
Yeah.
He's not like just some guy who's hanging out selling koozies and Speedos.
He's not a whale hobbyist.
He's not a whale enthusiast. It's true, though. It's true on land that large animals would have likely already been observed by humans, or in areas where they would come into contact with humans, they might have already been hunted to death, died due to pollution, or become unable to compete for their normal breeding territory, their food of choice, other resources. This happens. Look at the woolly mammoth. They may also become unable to accomplish annual migrations. And this is, in effect, another death sentence, just a slower one.
Yeah. Just to really fast get back to the amount of energy that a cryptid would require. So there are a couple of things that just come to my mind when we're thinking about this. So if you're thinking about a singular animal, right?
Okay.
And then you think about how much food that animal will require, you have to think, is it an herbivore, an omnivore? Does it eat primarily meat? Right. And then think about how much energy, like we said, that would require to eat. Then imagine this thing isn't alone. If there is a Bigfoot, there is a family of Bigfoots, unless they're, you know, they live forever, right? Or whatever animal it is, a horse-sized creature.
Yes.
There's going to be a herd at least of them that has survived over the centuries.
It reminds me of that band name, And You Will Know Us by Our Trail of Dead.
Oh, yeah, And You Will Know Us by the Trail of the Dead.
Well, yeah, sure. And maybe it's just grass that's getting eaten or some plant that exists out in the middle of nowhere. But, you know, there's going to be a big hole of resources where these things survive.
Right, right. And despite all these problems, all these very valid, let's call them cons to the argument for a large animal, we have one big pro on the other side. That is that the world is enormous. There are still a few places where it's possible that humanity could discover something the size of a Labrador, a Labradoodle, or larger. In fact, it's more possible now than at any other point in human history. So we can look at different regions of the world and see whether what would be the most or least likely to harbor an undiscovered large life form.
So our first stop on this journey would be to the jungles and the massive forests of the planet. Once these things spanned entire continents, they just nothing but trees as far as the eye could see. But now, because of manufacturing and agricultural techniques, these things have been drastically reduced, both in terms of their size and the biodiversity within their ecosystem. So a lot of the animals have been dying off. We are inside a mass die-off right now of species, and we've been kind of ramping up to that for the past few hundred years.
Paleontologists will tell you that we are officially in the sixth great extinction in the history of this planet.
Which
is like dinosaur leveling stuff, you know. Maybe not as sudden as a impact event, right?
Sure.
But in many ways as lethal. And this is not in any way involved with political standpoints or ideologies. This is just hard science.
There are resources that we use, that we extract, and one of those is wood and trees, and that's what we've been doing for a long time, and humanity's been expanding. It's just kind of the way we've been going.
I'm sort of torn on the point, too, where people say that we should stop as a species from pursuing agriculture, right? Because it keeps people alive. So at what point do we stop letting people eat? You know what I mean?
Or stop letting people reproduce.
Yeah, or stop letting people choose what they want to eat, right? Because if the entire world went vegetarian, there's that argument that there would be less pollution and that there would also be more food for people.
Those vertical farms, man, we got to start getting those.
Yeah, but I am just a walking garbage disposal. I haven't really met food that I wouldn't eat. I've met some that I didn't like.
You have a whole show where you just eat trash food.
Guys, anybody who's listening to this and doesn't have access to the How Stuff Works Facebook page, I just have to throw this out here right now. Ben and someone who's been on our show before, Lauren Vogelbaum, they do a show called Snack Stuff. And yesterday, during the live broadcast, Ben, not only did he eat canned rattlesnake, and Lauren, they both did, they took a shot of rattlesnake can juice at the end of
it. It's like a gravy. It's disgusting.
That is foul.
The look on poor Ben's face.
It was really bad. So the rattlesnake itself doesn't taste bad. The texture is really similar to like pulled pork.
I just don't like chicken. Stuff out of a can.
Yeah?
Canned stuff weirds me out. Potted meat.
Ooh. Canned stuff in general?
I mean, beans are okay. I'll take beans, but potted meat, no.
Yeah.
No, sir. No,
it's always fascinating when you see that stuff in the grocery store and it's not refrigerated and you read the ingredients, you check the expiration date, and you're like, wow, this could be sitting on the shelf for another 4 years.
Yeah, and it'd be fine, right?
It would be no worse than it was. But we do have that show with our esteemed friend and colleague and also co-host of a new show called Food Stuff.
Yeah.
Lauren Vogelbaum. So do check that out when you get a chance.
All right, let's get back to the jungle.
Welcome to the jungle. there are problems with investigating allegations of cryptids in the jungle. Let's take the world's largest tropical rainforest at the time of this recording. It's the Amazon. And it's been the site of hundreds of cryptid sightings or, you know, eyewitness accounts. Here's what makes it tough to hunt for cryptids in a place like the Amazon. The jungle is hungry. It aggressively devours buildings, structures, roads without constant maintenance. It's very difficult it's very difficult with constant maintenance to keep man-made structures around and viable. And without it, boom, the jungle just swallows them up.
Yeah, I can totally identify with this because we just had ivy growing in our backyard. And every couple of weeks, I'd have to go back there and take care of it, or that thing would just get overrun with just some simple ivy from here in the southeastern United States.
Very, certain plants are very motivated.
Yeah.
You know, kudzu is the legendary example here in the southeast. But that still has very little on the Amazonian jungle. Entire cities have been lost in the Amazon and only recently found again with the use of sophisticated laser-based surveillance technology like LIDAR, like Noel mentioned earlier. So if you don't have the resources to go to an isolated place and maintain a life long enough to maintain a structure and an operation long enough to observe this stuff, your chances of seeing anything are pretty small, especially if you're looking for something specific. You might be having a needle in a haystack moment. And given the vast biodiversity, it's also possible that people who believe they've seen a cryptid are misidentifying another known creature.
Here's a question. You guys know that movie Anaconda, where the snake eats
John Voight?
Is that a spoiler?
Yep.
Is it?
Yep.
Oh, what? A snake? A movie with the name Anaconda has a snake in it?
Well, no, a giant snake, but specifically the character.
I didn't say what it did after it ate John Boyd. That's the twist.
Oh, but see, now you...
Dude, we've been over this. Statute of Limitations. It's a crap movie anyway. Come on. Don't mess with it. No, my question, though, is would an absurdly large version of a known species be considered a cryptid?
Yeah, I would argue yes, because it's an interesting question. So is it an individual that's a very large anaconda, or is it a group of anacondas that are growing? And reptiles are weird too, because some reptiles will just continue to grow. Just spooky stuff. Yeah, but I think that's a good question. I would say I want to throw that to the listeners too. So ladies, gentlemen, and cryptids, if you're in the audience, let us know what you think. Is a very large version of a known animal, does that count as a cryptid? I would say, I'm tempted to say yes. I don't know.
Can a cryptid operate the internet?
Oh boy. So.
It can if it's encrypted.
Oh, all right. I'm leaving. I'm leaving right now.
So despite the difficulty in establishing a research outpost and the ease of misidentification, new species are still being found in the world's forests and jungles.
Yeah, in May of 2017, researchers found a brand new primate in Angola. Think about that. A brand new primate. That is a large animal. It's not huge, but it's at least, it's larger than a little bird.
They're literally calling it the pygmy Galago.
So...
Well, that means they're calling it a pygmy. It's not like some ironic Little John thing or something.
Yeah. It's small.
Yeah, it's only 6.5 inches long. So it isn't a large animal, just a undiscovered one.
Sure. But, one person 6.5 inches, when you think about microbes and you think about insects,
mm-hmm.
I'm still saying it's big.
Yeah, it's big, but it's not Labradoodle.
Okay, you're right.
But let's continue our search. Let's visit some other biomes. What about mountains and deserts?
Okay, let's get this one out of the way. Deserts are some of the most brutal locations in the entire world. On this planet, if you're in a desert, there's not much worse places you can be to live as an animal. You got to put up with a whole lot of stuff. You have to adapt like crazy. Deserts aren't always hot. Think about the empty quarter in Saudi Arabia or parts of the Sahara Desert.
Which most people think of, those are hot deserts, but Antarctica has desert in it.
Yes.
If living was a video game, deserts would be the stages that count as hard mode.
Oh, for sure.
So temperature is not the primary defining trait of a desert. An area with little vegetation is a desert. and fewer species of animals exist in deserts in comparison to other biomes. One famous cryptid described in the deserts of Mongolia is the Mongolian death worm, which I went through a phase. I was totally obsessed with this thing.
Yeah, man. It sounds like a sandworm type thing, but.
Is that like the guys from Tremors? Remember Tremors?
It's kind of like a smaller version of that, but they think the people say that it can spit acid or is coated with some sort of acid.
Mm,
but,
yum.
But it's a very remote area, but it's tough to think that there hasn't been one found, you know, unless it's. Maybe its body is completely cartilaginous.
So when it dies, it doesn't leave anything.
Right. That's a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
It just returns back to the sand.
Mm-hmm. To the sand from which it came. So cryptids are a large cryptid is probably not located in the desert. Mountains are a different story. Some animals thrive in the heights. And although we know they exist, it's tough to find them. Like, it's exceedingly rare for human beings to get a glimpse of the Himalayan snow leopard.
Which is a real thing.
Yeah.
It exists, and they're lurking out there. But the times that they come out, there aren't humans around a lot of times. They're very wary of other animals.
Mm-hmm.
And they're pretty well camouflaged, right? And aren't they designed more or less to blend in with, you know, heavy snows?
Designed. Yeah.
Design intelligently.
Yeah. This is one of the places where there are heavily region-based reports of the abominable snow folk, the Yeti.
Mm-hmm. You know? Well, it's so isolated, right? When you're talking about the Himalayan mountains, new types of bears and goats.
Not all mountains are created equally, you know, so... you're absolutely right about the Himalayas. We also would have to consider, you know, more thoroughly explored mountains in Western Europe probably don't have any large unidentified animals because that area is so heavily populated by humans, comparatively speaking. But there's another more exciting thing. We're talking about mountains, deserts. We have a very special case, caves. So I was thinking before when we talked about how there's probably not a large undiscovered animal in the Sahara or a sand desert. What I should have said was on the surface, because caves are a very special case. They're often removed from the planet's main source of energy, the sun. We're big fans of planet Earth. We mentioned that earlier in the show, right? In the episode on caves, one thing that's very interesting, the original planet Earth, is they talk about how the entire ecosystem is supported by guano, bat. I guess still stick with tuchus.
The straight bat poop.
Straight bat poop. Because they fly out and eat creatures or eat things that grow in accordance with sunlight and other parts of the food chain. And so now the subterranean system is one step further away from the source of energy. And this deficit of available energy would ordinarily mean no large creature could exist, but there's another option to consider, the Earth's internal heat source, the energy that powers geysers and volcanoes. There hasn't been a large living cryptid discovered in cave systems, at least not yet, but we do know for sure the world beneath our feet teems with undiscovered, very strange life. As we record this podcast, spelunkers and scholars alike are still discovering extremely strange creatures thousands of feet beneath the ground. And yeah, a lot of them are blind, like just no eyes, atrophy.
Yeah.
Spooky, spooky stuff.
Well, it's a difficult thing to get down very far into the earth. It's not easy to do, and it takes a lot of equipment and specialized training to do that. So you can't just have a mass search. You know, throughout the globe,
in
a bunch of caves.
If you screw it up, everything will cave in.
That's a possibility. Flooding, there are all kinds of dangers.
That's a good point.
Dangers.
One of the most dangerous pursuits, actually, is cave diving.
Ooh.
And apparently there are still pockets of caverns that are only accessible through a long underwater route. Mm-hmm. And then these ecosystems within these caverns function kind of like a... Did you guys ever see those little glass balls that have like plants growing in them and their own water? system. It functions like that in sort of a bubble or in an envelope. And it's completely possible that something lives there. But when we're speaking of things that look very alien to us normal, us surface walkers, us day walkers, we have one big area left to explore. And we'll get to it after a word from our sponsor.
So I alluded to this earlier in the show, is one of my favorite episodes of Planet Earth. Of all of the ecosystems on this planet, the ocean gives us the best odds for discovering a large cryptid like a Godzilla. Experts believe that we've explored going on 5% of the world's seabed. And to many experts and amateurs alike, this vast unknown stretch of the world poses the greatest possibility of discovering new large animals, to wit, sea monsters.
Yeah, man. And we've been finding some of these things over the years. Just in the recent past, we found the colossal squid. We found a whale that had a beak. It wasn't really a beak, but it was the beaked whale.
Yeah. And then we know there are other things to discover. So you've probably, if you're a fan of this show, that means you have probably, like us, gone down the rabbit hole before where you look up mysterious carcasses washed ashore. Noel pointed out earlier that whales wash ashore pretty often. And Matt, you and I have talked about this off air. A lot of those carcasses look radically different from a living whale and have often been misidentified as something else. But even with that being said, there are genuine accounts of experts not being able to identify the thing that washed up and saying, we don't know, maybe it's some kind of deep sea Lovecraftian shark.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a Pacific Rim style kaiju. I don't know, man.
Maybe it got dislodged when a ship sank or something. Who knows?
And just like life in cave systems, there's one big objection to the idea of a large creature living in the deep. That is energy. So we talked about some of those really strange, like deep sea anglerfish and tiny octopoid looking things. The truth of the matter is that at the abyssal plane, under that immense pressure that Matt mentioned, animals are going to tend to be smaller as a rule. Mm. And they're also further away from that source of energy, sunlight. But also similar to the cave idea, we do know of one very bizarre feature of the ocean floor, geothermal vents.
So these geothermal vents emit intense heat from the earth, and they act as a kind of underwater oasis for extremophiles and just possibly other larger forms of life.
So this means, to steal a line from Dumb and Dumber, we're saying there's a chance.
Yep.
There is a chance that there's large undiscovered life. Not a very good chance. Not really good odds if you're gambling. But if something large and undiscovered exists, it almost certainly would have to exist in the ocean.
Yeah, and it'd have to be able to hide or at least conceal itself in some way to evade all of the different tracking techniques that we have, mm-hmm. where you can look at the bottom of the ocean floor or anything that is existing there. The technology that large fisheries use,
mm-hmm.
you can see what's on the bottom of the floor.
And then this is just a brainstorm thing. It's entirely speculation on my part. But there is a possibility that other forms of life would be discovered in the deep by militaries using submarines. And mm-hmm. then they would choose not to reveal it because doing so would also reveal the technology they use to find the thing.
Like at the certain level that they're at,
mm-hmm.
Where they're able to – or maybe even where they're operating.
Right. Like, what is this? What is this Russian sub doing in the Indian Ocean?
Yeah,
you know what I mean. So that's purely speculation on my part. That might as well be the plot for a dime store novel or something.
Writing it down.
You should hop on that, Ben.
I should in general hop more often.
Yeah, and I think you're selling it short. Dime store. No, that is a potential bestseller.
Well, thank you so much. The collapse of oceanic ecosystems as we said, the key here is that this becomes a time-sensitive pursuit. Humanity's explorers are racing against humanity's pollution. So if something big exists out there, it's also tragically likely that it will be extinct before we actually see it.
Jeez. That's a tough thought. We've all seen images, I'm assuming, of, is it the Pacific trash thing?
Oh,
what is
the trash vortex?
Yeah, and all that. I mean, that's just, it's hard to know that that's happening. And in some way, I guess we're all just contributing to that. Yikes.
It's okay. Our time will come.
Yeah.
It feels like it's getting here.
What goes around comes around.
Oh, ooh. I like both of those things.
Like a trash vortex.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
I feel like a rose without a thorn, so I'm trying to figure out why this would happen to all of us.
We hope that you enjoyed this exploration, and if you are interested in cryptozoology, please do check out our earlier videos and podcasts. We have a very special announcement for you at the end of the show, a little bit of a teaser, if you will. But before that, enough about us. What about you?
Shout out corners.
Our first shout out today comes from Jenna, who wrote to us after watching Etched in Secret, our Georgia Guidestones documentary on Amazon. If you haven't seen it yet, do it now. Jenna had some very interesting ideas about the future of humanity, but more importantly, she had a fantastic episode suggestion. So Jenna says, a person I think would be interesting to explore in a podcast is the Unabomber Ted Kaczynski. He convinced the FBI to publish his manifesto against the system in the Washington Post. It is the single day when the most newspapers were sold, so he would stop the bombs being sent through the mail. He convinced the FBI to publish his manifesto against the system in the Washington Post, and that happened to be the day when they sold the most newspapers to that point. That's what she says. We haven't confirmed that independently, but it wouldn't surprise me if that were very close to the case. And he did this so that he would basically, he held them hostage more or less so that he would stop sending bombs in the mail if they would agree to publish his manifesto. It led to his arrest, and his court-appointed attorneys wanted to plead insanity, so Kaczynski fired them and wanted to speak for himself. He did have several degrees, though none were in law. Yet he was forced into a plea deal because the FBI didn't want the public to see how logical he was. Interesting perspective. He now has several books published. On a side note, it was three guns that killed JFK. Okay. All right. No further explanation there. Thanks for the great podcast, and thanks for the interesting perspectives.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very interesting point that I think would make a good topic for examination in an episode. Let us know if you agree with Jenna and would like us to delve into the biography of the Unabomber along with his motivations and legal proceedings, because he very much does believe there is stuff they don't want you to know.
Our next shout out goes out to Danara, who sent us a message to, quote, chime in about our serial killers on the loose part two episode, specifically about the Oakland County child killer.
Oh, yeah, I remember this one.
Okay, so Dinara says, my memories are fuzzy, but I grew up in Detroit. My dad had been a DA, a district attorney in Wayne County. That's Detroit City. Oakland County is the next county to the north. I was about 8 years old when the killings took place. We never once called him the babysitter. The grown-ups called him, quote, the snow killer, because they always found the kids posed as snow angels the night after a new snowfall. Us kids called him the snow angel, mostly in whispers. My dad and his family were staunchly Catholic. Grandfather did PR, public relations work, for the diocese for free. Dad did legal work for the diocese also for free. This matters because Dad was having a conversation with one of the cops involved, and this subject came up. The cop was spitting mad because they knew who did it, and they couldn't touch him. Oh, okay, that's news to me. He was a Catholic priest. Dad didn't believe it, neither did grandfather. Okay, pulling out of the listener mail really fast, I had not seen that anywhere in the research.
No, I hadn't either.
But that's, you know, fascinating. I'm going to look into that now. We're going back in. The priest got hit by a car and died, and the killings stopped. Once the snow started falling the next year and there were no bodies, Dad said we didn't have to go to church anymore. Grandfather had stopped going over the summer, and they both cut off all contact with the Catholic clergy, even their best friends. Neither of them ever talked about it. Jeez. Okay, so on top of his legal career, Dad wrote books, crime novels. When he found out he was dying, he started writing The Snow Killer. And unfortunately, he died before finishing it. Jeez.
This is fascinating information. Thank you for writing in, De Niro, because we didn't find in the course of the research we're doing information about a Catholic priest being involved.
No, not at all. And a lot of that stuff, I never saw The Snow Killer mentioned in any of the articles that were written at the time. Mm. So, I don't know. News to me.
Thank you so much for writing in. We have one more shout out today. It is to Brent. Brent says, guys, just listen to the Red Mercury episode. A couple of points. You mentioned the possibility of Red Mercury being a code name for something else. There is a precedent for this in the nuclear community. During World War II, uranium was always referred to by the code name copper. So how did they refer to element 29, actual copper? It was honest to God copper. Also, you're right, buying a pig in a poke is buying something sight unseen, often a dog or a cat rather than an actual pig. Thus, inadvertently revealing the scam was letting the cat out of the bag.
Whoa.
Keep it going. Thank you for the etymology lessons there, Brent. That's pretty awesome.
Talk about connecting dots.
Yeah, I think we're going to stick with badgers, though. I've never bought a dog in a bag.
No. Or a pig.
Noel is nodding in a very, like, sympathetic way right now.
Well, I mean, I don't know. It just seems like a real stretch to agree to buying a creature sight unseen. I mean, what if it turns out to be some sort of bizarre acid-spitting cryptid that, you know, as soon as you open that drawstring,
yeah,
it jumps right out and, yeah, you know, melts your face off with its acid venom.
Somehow. We should make a PSA.
Ooh.
We should do a PSA against buying things in bags without looking inside the bag.
Starring the funny thing is, I have a kid, and there's a big thing that kids love these days is these little things you buy, these little trinkets where you don't know what's in it. It's like, it looks like a little yogurt cup. And it's got this little, like, an Asian kind of trinket that's a stamp or a lip balm or something like that.
Okay.
And the whole joy of it is in not knowing what it is. But at least you know that it's not going to eat your face off.
Yeah. It's not a living creature.
That's honestly why I love magic cards. When you buy the packs and you don't know what the rare is.
Oh. Maybe one day you'll get a live pig.
Oh, I only hope so.
Speaking of fantastic segues, this concludes our but not our show. Visit our website, Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, to check out any and all of the episodes that Matt, Noel, and I have done in previous days.
Can I do a plug?
Yeah,
because we got a new show. It's not ours,
oh, yeah,
but we participated in it. It's, I don't know if you guys are familiar with the wonderful, wonderful publication and website, Mental Floss. Well, the two dudes, Will and Mangesh, that actually founded that publication, work for us now. Not us, Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. Us, you know, the greater How Stuff Works.
They work
universe.
With us.
They do work with us, and they are lovely, lovely dudes. And they have a new show called Part-Time Genius that, Ben helped editorially with. I did the audio mixing and the music and sound design. And Tristan, who's producing the show, did the editing.
And I did some promotional videos.
You
for
did
it.
Indeed. We all had our fingers in that particular badger pot.
It takes a village. And we think that you are really going to enjoy the show. The guys worked really hard on it. They are brilliant. They're far, far too humble, in my opinion. And I used to, funny story, I've been a fan for years from the Mental Floss days, and I have an autographed book of theirs.
Wow.
it's strange. But yeah, the show is out now. I think they released four episodes.
Four in one go. So you got like some nice material to dig through. They're about 45 minutes apiece, and there are four on the channel right now. Part-Time Genius on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or anywhere else you get your audio delights.
And one warning, if you hear the theme song for Part-Time Genius, it will not leave your ears for many a day. It is.
I made that.
It's awesome, but man, that thing is a jammer.
So let us know what you think of Part-Time Genius. If you like our show, you will love theirs as well.
Oh, and one last thing, lest we forget. Gentlemen, listeners, we have a special treat. Very soon we will be having David Becerra, the gentleman who runs Expedition Bigfoot.
Yeah, speaking of cryptids.
Yes, a Bigfoot museum in North Georgia, and he's going to be coming physically in to this studio, into this room, and we're going to speak with him hopefully next week.
In the meantime, if you have a topic that you think your fellow listeners would enjoy learning about, let us know. You can find us on Instagram. You can find us on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us in darkened rooms with mirrors. But you have to say the right words in the right sequence. Or you can write to us directly. We are
conspiracy@howstuffworks.com.